Just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. And Jonesy, we're going to jump right into it as we begin Smith and Jones on a Friday afternoon, and lots of speculation and chatter out there about the province of Ontario and some restrictions that may be coming later today from Premier Doug Ford, specifically as it relates to Toronto and perhaps Peel as well. But in the world of sports, and certainly as it impacts one team in this city, the Toronto Raptors, and certainly, to be completely frank, it impacts us as far as broadcasting games and whatnot and working for the team and for the station and for Sportsnet as well. Folks, I'm going to read this word for word as it came literally within the last 3 minutes. So I'm just reading this for now the second time. I believe it's going to be the first time you've had a chance to hear it directly yourself. So I will read the entire press release that just came from the Toronto Raptors, a statement from Masai Ujiri. And this is quoted again from Masai Ujiri. The Raptors worked diligently with public health officials at the local, provincial, and federal level to secure a plan that would permit us to play our 2020-2021 season on home soil and our home court at Scotiabank Arena. These conversations were productive, and we found strong support for the protocols we put forward. Ultimately, the current public health situation facing Canadians, combined with the urgent need to determine where we play, means that we will begin our 2020-2021 season in Tampa, Florida. We want to thank all levels of government and their public health officials for their dedication to this process and for looking after the health of Canadians. We commit to continuing our work together, planning for a safe return to play in Toronto. And as an organization, we remain committed to doing all we can to promote and demonstrate public health measures to help combat the spread of COVID-19 in Canada. So, we'll be away from our home and our fans for now. They say absence makes the heart grow fonder. I'm not sure if that's possible for us. We love Toronto and Canada, and we know we have the best fans in the NBA. For now, I'll ask you to cheer for us, from afar, and we'll look forward to the day we are all together again. That again, the statement from Masai Ujiri just minutes ago.
And there it is. You know, there were, it's funny because we had a lot of people, I don't know if slagging or throwing shade at us because we, you know, we were advocating for the team playing at home, and we weren't the only ones by the sounds of it. So it is. So they go to Tampa. You know, as much as people would say, that's good. It's fine. It doesn't bring stuff to Toronto. The other side of it too, is it puts whoever's going to be with the team in Tampa in, would it be correct to say more danger, or maybe in a higher probability spot with more cases than it would in Toronto? That being said, you know, the government makes a decision, a tough decision, which they feel is probably best for the province and best for everybody.
I mean, I don't know how else to put it any better, Jonesy. I think you just said it perfectly right there. I think the question that will immediately pop up for a lot of people, and it's already happening on social media, at least, if you kind of quickly scroll through your own Twitter feed, Jonesy, let alone so many others that are just talking about this. And this will be the question for not just the Raptors now playing out of Tampa, at least temporarily, but for the other 29 teams in the league. And certainly it's the same question and conversation we've been having about the National Football League, about baseball, about what the NHL might be doing as well. Is it safe to do so? And why Tampa? Why not Buffalo? Why not other cities? Why not other states, perhaps, where maybe the virus isn't as rampant? Perhaps in Western New York, just over the border, it's not as bad as maybe it is in Tampa or other places. But I have to, you know, listen, I'm not an expert on this. I have to trust the fact that the Raptors have crossed T's, dotted I's, looked at how they're staying, where they're staying, how they're traveling, what facilities will be, what the arena is going to be like, practice facilities, probably factoring. Listen, you got to factor in everything at this point when you're relocating your franchise temporarily, probably factoring weather and living arrangements and tax situations and travel within the league itself right now, maybe being in closer proximity to certain other cities to perhaps lessen some of the travel and the logistics of getting in and out of the airports and whatnot. And I'm probably forgetting about, 2,000 other things that went into a decision like this.
Yeah, you're right. And, there's lots to unpack. There really, really is. And, for people that are out there on social media asking what happens to us, we don't know. I'll be right out and candidly frank with you. We don't know. We don't know what the future holds for us. Do we go to Tampa? Are we still calling games here? We are kind of riding along with it the same way everybody else is. So it'll be interesting to see over the next few days as things start to shake down, where everything lands. But I mean, the good thing for the players at least now and the people in the organization, they now know there's a decision been made. They were talking about having parallel paths, but there it is. The decision's been made. The Raptors will start playing with Tampa as home base right now.
We'll talk more about this over the course of the show. And in a few minutes' time, Steve Ashburner is going to join us on the program. And, Steve's been covering the NBA for a long time. We'll get his opinion, Jonesy, on what I'm going to ask you as well. And it's something that we've talked about certainly over the course of this week with all of our various guests and whatnot. But how much do you think this impacts the Raptors as we kind of fast forward to, now less than 5 hours from now when 6 p.m. Eastern rolls around and free agency opens? And I remember saying to you, I can't remember if it was Monday or Tuesday, but my opinion would be somebody that you're locking up long-term, perhaps if you're able to re-sign Fred VanVleet or Serge Ibaka or anybody else, listen, they know that eventually, whether eventually is January, whether it's March, whether it's next fall, hopefully not, eventually the Raptors are going to be in Toronto. Eventually your home will be in Toronto. You will have to find a home in Toronto. This will be home base. But in the short term, especially for guys maybe only signing a one-year deal, Jonesy, and maybe only locking in for this year, do you think that this has a potential negative impact on the Raptors in terms of trying to woo free agents to come to this team, not knowing where they're actually going, or at least for now knowing, well, I'm going to Tampa, but I might eventually be going to Toronto, but then I might be going back to the States, or I might never actually go to Toronto because I might be in Tampa the entire season. So you know what? Hold on. I'm just going to sign with somebody else.
It has its impacts. It does. First of all, not being able to get a guy to Toronto to show him the city, sell him on the city, the facility, the vibe, everything else, because it's different. And, some people say, well, it's not America. Well, in some ways it's better. And all you have to do is talk to any Raptor player that has come to Canada from another country, be it the U.S., Italy, Spain, like wherever. And they will say, man, what a great city Toronto is. So that has an impact right there. You can't get the guy here to sell him your city. Now, you're selling the franchise still. So having him, if he's American born, come to Tampa and know, well, I got warm weather here. I'm with good people. I'm with a good organization. This is only temporary. That is a drawback, but it also has its benefits too, because what you're ultimately selling is the organization. The hard part is you the person can't get a look at everything you have to offer at home, right? It's like, it's kind of like buying a house off plans. This is what it's going to look like. And you hope that the plans and what you're selling lives up to what they think. But you've also got a pretty good track record from building things the last 7-8 years and winning a championship just a year ago.
Again, the Toronto Raptors announcing just before we hit the airwaves, literally a minute or two before, they made it official with the press release from Masai Ujiri that the Toronto Raptors will begin their 2020-21 season in Tampa, Florida. And that's the other key to all this too, Jonesy. They will begin their season there. There's nothing to say that they will end the season there. This could be for a few months. I assume the logistics of going into relocating the franchise temporarily, I've got to imagine this would be locked in for the first half of the schedule, which has not yet been released. But if you recall, and I'm speaking more so to the audience, Jonesy, the NBA, when they announced earlier in the week the details of the coming season, they did say that they were going to do it in two separate chunks. They said it's training camp December 1st, it's season starting December 22nd, there's an all-star break in March, even though there's going to be no all-star game, and that will essentially serve as sort of the halfway point of the season where teams will then reconvene after 7 days and begin the second half of the season, and that's when they will also announce, maybe in the, you know, a few weeks prior to that, the schedule for the second half. But we're anticipating a first half schedule that will likely, I assume, be chopped into, you know, a 50-50 split of 36 and 36 in terms of the total games to get you to your 72-game season. But whenever that schedule comes out in the next 7 to 10 days, it's only supposed to be the first half of the year. And I would imagine the Raptors, just from, again, a logistical standpoint, they would have to lock in to that first half in Tampa and then hope to reconvene, redo things in Toronto in the second half if it's ultimately safe to do so and deemed able to do so by the various levels of government. I don't know if we still have Jonesy or not, but we'll...
Our producer Derek jumped in and to tell me something. I was listening to Derek. Yeah, no, Eric, I think they're going to finish the season here. Look, precautions are being made in Canada to, lower cases and flatten the curve. And you and I talked about this morning, before, you know, anything to do with the show. I just think Canadians, especially in our little circle here, Ontarians, not doing a great job right now, have this COVID fatigue. And, you know, a lot of stuff is coming from, you know, gatherings that probably shouldn't be happening. And, you know, the government's talking about clamping down on stuff. Well, there's a lot of stuff that they're letting go that they should be clamping down. If you're going to clamp down and stop it, then clamp down and stop it. I mean, if you're going to fix a leak, fix the entire leak. Don't just patch it so it keeps leaking again. Like, you know, get after it. And so I have to think that, you know, by the time we hit March, well, I shouldn't say I have to think. I have to hope that things will be different and be better.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed for that, certainly. And maybe to help us dissect this and just give his opinion as well. And oh, yeah, by the way, free agency starts in about 4.5 hours, a little more than 4.5 hours. To talk about all of that from NBA.com, veteran NBA writer Steve Ashburner. Steve, thanks for the time today.
Hi, guys. I saw Masai's statement just moments before you called. So that's... another wrinkle to a year full of them, I guess, both yeah. NBA related and general life.
Steve, let me ask you, and I don't know if you heard me mention this to Jonesy or if you weren't quite on the line yet. It's all just conjecture and opinion at this point. How much do you think that this move, this temporary move, impacts what Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster, the management team hope to now do 5 hours from now in free agency, not just with their own free agents they're trying to bring back, but trying to be an active player in the market for other guys and trying to fill out their roster without, you know, knowing where their team will be kind of short, long term, and the uncertainty that goes with it?
Yeah, you know, will they become more attractive to the guys who like Florida, you know, at least for some portion of a season? Or will the, you know, just the disjointedness suitcase feel to it, you know, be a negative? I'm not sure. I mean, when it comes to keeping a guy like Fred VanVleet, I don't think that would make one bit of difference. And he's got all sorts of reasons to either stay or go. And an oddball kind of a regular season schedule. And hopefully that's all this is for some period of time. Wouldn't swing it. I don't know. I think so much focus is on money and opportunity to play on the floor that, you know, it would largely be an afterthought. I think most people are going to look at this as a patch job and nothing that's going to be all that enduring. And, you know, that's my hunch. But boy, it's different. I mean, I've been around teams that have played elsewhere. I remember when, you know, the Sonics had to play in Tacoma. Well, that was just down the road, and players could live where they were living. They just had to plan their commute to the arena a little bit differently. But yeah, this is different. This is sort of a, you know, a mini bubble for one team when the ambition is to really get teams back in their buildings. So, a challenge I don't know that we've seen in recent memory.
Well, Ash, I'll say this, and I remember that too when they were redoing Key Arena and they played up in the dome in Tacoma. That it throws everything out of whack. I mean, you know, you're a player, you're used to, you know, you live at a certain spot, you're close to the practice facility, you can go and get shots up at night, you're all of those things that were, you know, that were, you know, that are really important to, you know, to guys. You can't do that. I mean, the Raptors will be in Tampa. I mean, they're going to have to establish some kind of home base, probably take over a gym, all the little things. I mean, you know, Ash, you know, we all know what it's like when you go to, you know, Billings, Montana for a preseason game where they're not used to having the NBA, right? And the Wi-Fi doesn't work, or you're in Ontario, California, and the Wi-Fi doesn't work, and your press seat's too far away, and where's, like, how do you get locker room access? And there's all these little ancillary things that you don't think about, you know, that you go into your own kitchen, you know where the glasses are, you know where the laundry soap is, you know where the knives and forks are. All these things are going to be different, and it's going to take time for the team to get used to, and other teams moving in and out of there to play them to get used to.
Well, that's right. I agree with you 100%. I mean, this will be a challenge, you know, a much smaller one, but even for visiting NBA teams. I mean, that familiarity with hotels and restaurants and nightlife and things that, you know, NBA players come to expect and probably are craving, you know, more than ever. I mean, it would have to be on a limited basis, depending on the various shutdown restrictions of any city. Florida is a little more open than many, but... Yeah, and now if that's your home base, your quote-unquote home base, just what's first thing? I mean, family, loved ones. Do they make this trip too? It's not the strict bubble that Orlando was, where they let your people in later. But the geography is a challenge. I mean, if your home life is in Toronto, do you uproot people for, you know, a season or a portion of a season? No, it's asking a lot, and particularly on the heels of what the NBA came through and did. I mean, this was a defending champion team this season, and, you know, they went along when you had some noise at the very beginning about teams really not being into this. I don't think Toronto faltered at all, and now they're facing you know, challenges and hurdles that nobody else in the league will face. I mean, now, I'll say this, and you guys probably can relate to this. When it comes to sheer work and locking in with blinders, I feel like some of my at least most productive work is when I've been on extended road trips, because it's sort of like that's all you got. You know, you're not worrying about the water heater that needs replacement tomorrow, and you're, you know, all the various real life type of things. And for as long as you can keep the blinders on, you know, you can do some great work, but they come off at some point, and it's hard to keep them on for, like I say, longer than maybe an extended road trip. And that's what people had to do in Orlando, except they knew that there were, you know, 21 other teams that were doing that, at least at the beginning. Whereas now it's sort of like, wait a minute, we're being asked here, you know, for something that nobody else has to navigate. And, you know, that could mess with your concentration.
Speaking with Steve Ashburner from NBA.com. Steve, I guess the other element to all this, and I know you just touched on it a little bit, is we can often be maybe guilty as fans of saying you kind of lock in on maybe the players or maybe just the players and the coaches. You start thinking about the organization in general, from workout coaches to the therapists to the you know, to the trainers, to the, you know, to the public relations folks and whatever else. Those that are going to have to uproot for at least the next, I don't know, 3-4 months potentially, till, let's say, March, let's say the first half of the season. We're talking about families then, too. Are you leaving your spouse for 4 months? Are you leaving your children for 4 months? And for players, like I think Jonesy right off the bat, of a guy like Kyle Lowry, his family lives in Toronto during the season. His kids go to school in Toronto. You know, Fred VanVleet with young children as well. So are you now saying, no, stay in Rockford, stay in Philadelphia, stay, go to school there, or are you bringing them down? Now you've got to find schooling and temporarily put them in school in Tampa and then find out halfway through the season, oh, hold on a second, we're moving back to Toronto. Okay, so are you guys going back to Philly? You coming to Toronto, or are you staying here in Tampa? It really is, and the thing, too, is I'm not saying this critically because this is just the world we're living in right now. This is the hand that's been dealt, but it's a logistical, I don't know if it's a nightmare, but it's sure a logistical headache trying to figure out everything that goes with the, oh, yeah, by the way, we're just trying to play a game.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Refresh my memory, if you can, why was a place like Buffalo not available or chosen for this? I mean, that would seem, the proximity would seem to make it, you know, more realistic.
The best answer I could probably give you, Steve, is I think it probably was considered, but at the same time, you know, perhaps it's just the logistics of the border period. So whether you're in a warm climate or a cold climate, the border's closed and you come across the Canadian border, you've got to quarantine for 14 days. I don't know, Jones, if you have a better answer than that.
No, and Eric, we know that. Like, there are, you know, people always get their knickers in a knot about the tax implications in Canada and the number of days in the country and out of the country. And look, we've been with the team where they know they're going to on an extended road trip, Ash, and there's going to be a couple of extra days in there. And rather than, you know, stay in Cleveland for 2 days off before the next game in Miami, well, that night after the game, get on the plane. And even though you land at three in the morning in Miami, you wake up in Miami, you're somewhere warm. So I'm sure that, you know, that had something to do with it. And as much as I talked about all of the, the changes and adjustments that need to be made about the arena and practice facility and, you know, a practice gym and hotels and all that, if you're doing that, I'm sure you'd rather do it somewhere warm than do it where the climate is not as favorable.
Yeah, that's true. And you're right. I mean, that if you're headquartered in Buffalo, there's that temptation, you know, that someone coming one way or the other, you know, a player going back home or family coming across, and now you don't have any sense of the quarantine element, the distancing that you know is needed, certainly chronologically. And so, yeah, it might be better to be way far away and remove those sorts of those temptations and potential, you know, mishaps.
Speaking with Steve Ashburner from NBA.com. Okay, Steve, it's certainly huge news in this area and breaking news, so we had to spend a great deal of time talking about it. But, oh, yeah, by the way, now we're about 4.5 hours away to free agency. And one of the biggest free agents, maybe arguably the biggest, is Fred VanVleet. We anticipate, obviously, Anthony Davis staying with the Los Angeles Lakers. What do you think becomes of Fred, and is he back in a Raptor uniform, Steve?
Well, you know, nobody cares what I think. I mean, you guys might for this purpose, but I would love to see Fred VanVleet stay put. I've seen players in the past who they get paid more and they leave and they go somewhere and it's not ideal and the burden is too great, or they just feel they have to live up to a contract. I know he's an immensely confident player. I mean, given his background and the climb he has made, you know, from undrafted out of Rockford, Illinois and all. But the best fits sometimes are the ones that, you know, maybe they're not quite top dollar. And I don't even know if the Raptors are willing to, to rub elbows with any crazy offer he might get. I think when you're the kind of player Fred VanVleet is, you have to be very careful that, you know, especially as a point guard where you're dependent on the success of your teammates, you got to be very careful that you just don't go to a place and you become their bauble, their gem. They get some headlines for a while, and now you've got a tougher on-court situation, regardless of what you're getting paid for it. So, if there's a, you know, a place that makes sense and he can both make more money and still go to a contender, I've got to think the level of success he has enjoyed with the Raptors as a team, you know, that's something else. I mean, again, lots of players are confident, well, I'll be the guy that changes it, and good for them. Some do it, many do not. You know, I like the fit there, and the last thing Toronto needs, you know, letting the Raptors or having them slip away for part of a season is then losing Fred VanVleet as well.
Ash, you know, I hear you, because there are a lot of guys that do that. And the one thing I give Fred, I think, maybe credit or an advantage that he has that other people don't, I don't think he's the kind of guy that only looks good in a system. I mean, we've seen those players in the past that, you know, the guy that always comes to mind is, I think he's a coach now in the league. He was with New York. Guy was a terrific player in Utah, Howard Eisley, and then he left, and I'm sure teams went, wait a minute, this is not the same dude. Do you remember all that, Steve, when he was, you know, he was really good there, and then, you know, he seemed to, I wouldn't say struggle, but, you know, look good in a system, but not necessarily be what people thought they were getting. The good thing about Fred is I think he's a ball player no matter where he goes.
Yeah, I was with Howard when he was drafted into Minnesota, and that was a system where almost any player would look worse, I think, when they played for those Timberwolves back then. And then he got out, he got to Utah, then he looked like, you know, a better player. And then somehow, I guess, he probably found his level, and it wasn't all that great afterwards. But, yeah, Howard needed to get to Utah first to even look like a player, leave Minnesota, and then – no, I get that. I know. And I wouldn't – you know, no, I think Van Vliet is, you know, self-contained that way. But there are a lot of components then that go into team success. He might not look bad. He might be able to put up his numbers, even better numbers, but is that going to translate to other things? And, now, I'll just say I bring a conservative outlook to this sort of stuff because, you know, I like to see players when they're thriving. And we've seen it with Van Vliet. Can he take it to another level? Maybe. I mean, when Jimmy Butler was in Chicago, I'm based in Chicago, and I probably underestimated him at every step. I thought, oh, this guy's – I don't know if this guy's going to make it as the number 30 pick. And then I thought, well, he's got an awfully flat shot, and he seems to have short arms, and, oh, maybe okay as a rotation guy. And then he refused to sign the first extension opportunity he had with Chicago, and I'm like, boy, don't you want to grab that, lock in, and then worry about what comes next after? And he, you know, he played it out. He gambled on himself. I mean, he pushed his way, not always in the best terms, from Chicago to Minnesota to Philadelphia to Miami. And kind of Jimmy Butler won, you know, any sort of assessments that way. People have kind of forgotten, you know, how he got there and the chafing that went on with his previous teams. And he's now considered, you know, one of the faces of the league and one of the stars, and he's kind of maxed out a potential that many of us here in Chicago didn't think he would reach. So I'll fess up to that. I don't want to sell Fred Van Vliet short. He knows better. I just am more aware of the downside. I'm sort of a half-empty guy in life in general. So, you know, I see a few snowflakes, and I wonder how much I'm going to have to shovel.
Hey, join the club, Steve. I'll throw myself into that club as well. We got a couple of minutes left here, and we spent so much time talking on the Raptors. I did want to hit at least one other angle as it relates to the NBA and what's gone down the last few days, Steve. The Golden State Warriors obviously dealt a major blow with Klay Thompson and the Achilles, and obviously we wish all the best to Klay in his recovery. But very interesting considering the rumblings now about the acquisition of Kelly Oubre Jr. And you start thinking about that team that, oh yeah, still has this dude named Steph Curry, still has Draymond Green, just got the number 2 pick. Oh yeah, late last year they picked up Andrew Wiggins. You suddenly add a Kelly Oubre to the mix, and I'm thinking, all right, I'd rather have Klay Thompson, yes, but that team doesn't look too damn bad if you ask me.
No, I mean, you know, they should be off the floor. You know, what, a 15-50 last season. I mean, that's going to be a memory. But, you know, do they inspire recollections of you know, the great Warrior teams that we saw during the run before that? I don't think so. I think Klay Thompson was, you know, essential to that. Kelly Oubre and Andrew Wiggins, to me, they seem like patch jobs. They seem along the level of well, Harrison Barnes was there when it started, but obviously they had an opportunity to upgrade from him. They brought in D'Angelo Russell, you know, and that was before moving him on to Minnesota. That seemed like, you know, that's not quite going to get it done. It'll be interesting to see, but I really was looking forward to seeing them spring back instead of sort of climb rung by rung back. You know, Kelly Oubre is a nice player. I know Andrew Wiggins is a native son. I was around him in Minnesota. You know, there's nothing that other than seeing the flashes of his skills, his commitment to be the best NBA player he can be, to me, has been sorely lacking. And the Warriors culture is supposed to get that out of him. We'll see. You know, we didn't have an opportunity this past year, but we'll see what happens when, you know, Steph is there and playing and in the locker room and ready to go. And Draymond Green is, you know, this is who he's got. And he's, you know, he can't make a parking lot phone call to Kevin Durant, you know, until maybe next summer. It was a real shame. I think Klay Thompson, not only is he a tremendous player, and most of us, you know, are happy to always see him on the floor when we're covering a game, but he's a great guy too. And he very unassuming. He seems about as simple as you could expect for an NBA player that's had so much success. To not have him out there, to know that he has to go through this, you know, again in the midst of his prime, that's a real downer. And I remember on draft night when, you know, the news of it broke, and the speculation was, I mean, what's Golden State going to do? They have to change their plan entirely. Well, they didn't do that. They picked James Wiseman. I thought that was the right thing to do. They wanted Wiseman for certain things he can provide this season, but also, you know, as sort of a bridge to what comes next as Steph gets older and Draymond, you know, ages. And that'll be there. The development of James Wiseman is probably going to be a higher priority now. But, it's a shame. I mean, the more strong teams we have, and to have a team come back from that kind of a plummet due to injuries was, I think, going to be one of the happier stories. And now it's just sort of a story.
Hey, Steve, we appreciate the time on the show today. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the frenzy that begins in a few hours' time, and thanks for your insights on the Toronto situation as well. Stay safe and healthy, and we'll talk soon.
What does it mean for you guys? Who gets to stay put, and who has to go down to Florida?
We're waiting to find out.
No idea, Ash. Yeah, I'll let you know. Check is in the mail. I'll let you know when we know.
Well, if you come through Chicago and they let us in the building, you can fill me in then. But don't forget to take your warm. Don't forget your cold weather clothes just because you're going to be down there.
Yeah, we'll do. Thanks, Steve. There is Steve Ashburner, veteran NBA writer from NBA.com.
Spoken from a guy who spent most of his time in Minnesota and Chicago, and people complain about the cold weather in Toronto.
Yep. Well, the Toronto Raptors, again, folks, if you're just tuning in, will begin the 2020-2021 season playing out of Tampa Bay, Florida. We will take the break, Jonesy. We were going to talk football, but there's lots to digest and chew on here still with this latest news and this breaking news coming from the Toronto Raptors. So you and I will just continue to chat about this when we continue on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you here till the top of the hour. Writer's block coming up at 2 o'clock. We were going to talk about the National Football League as Week 11 officially got underway last night in the showdown between Seattle and Arizona. And Jones, yesterday on the show, I asked you for the over-under. You said it privately as Vegas Jones set the over-under at 48. I said I took the over. If I get it, $5. If I lose, $5 to you. And somehow, some way, Vegas Jones knew the number because the total was 49, and I took the over. So you owe me $5, Jonesy, and I'm going to give you a chance to get your money back and go double or nothing on the Eagles and Browns this weekend, and I will take the Eagles because I know you're not going to bet against your Brownies. And what is the number, 3.5?
It's gone down to 3.
Okay, I'll take it at 3 then. I should have locked in last night when it was 3.5, so I'll take the Eagles and the 3.
I'm going to have to talk to my boy House Money Steve Rapp about this. Like, you know, like I don't want to get into a situation where what Super Bowl was it where the Cowboys played the Steelers, and it was an infamous Super Bowl Sunday in Vegas because, as the gamblers would say, the house got middled. Like, the line was 3.5, and all the money came in. And so they set the line at 4.5, and the score was 21-17. So they had to pay on both sides. They had to pay the people that had 3.5 and took the, you know, took the over, like the beat 3.5, and the people that had 4.5 and it came. So I don't know. I better talk to my.
Okay, hold on. I'm gonna do something for you. I shouldn't have to do this, but because my kid for some reason is an Eagles fan, and it's only $5, and we're having fun here, and you did kind of get. You know, you got sort of roped into this because I just put you on the spot to set the over-under, and all of a sudden
really,
you're $5.
Really?
Now you're
that's
$5.
That's where you go, no comment. That's where you go, no comment.
Okay,
no
but comment. Hey, now you have free reign to do it to me at some point in the season. So here's what I'm going to do for you, Jonesy. It's double or nothing, and I'm taking no points. It's a straight-up bet. I'm taking the Eagles over your Browns. If you have faith in your Brownies, you should be picking them either way. They're 6-3 against a sub-500 Eagles team. No points. I'm taking the Eagles straight up, double or nothing.
Okay, what happened to the Eagles?
Right?
What happened to the Eagles last week?
Let's not talk about it.
Okay. So, you know that they're going to come out like swinging.
Wait, Jonesy, it's $5.
I told you, this is why I stopped. I mean, that $5 is a chocolate bar. It's a bag of chips.
Okay, so hold on. Let's make it a $10 bet then. So if I win, now you owe me 15. But if you win, now I owe you $5.
No. Let's stay with the double or nothing. Let's stay with the double or nothing. And
all right.
I'll be watching anxiously as Baker Mayfield starts slinging it all over the place. We'll see.
And by the way, you brought up Howard Eisley in our conversation with Steve Ashburner. Was an assistant with the New York Knicks up until 2019 and was a long-time assistant in the NBA for almost a full decade from 2010 to 2019. And that, of course, prior to that, a player in the league from 94 to 2006 when he ended his career with the Denver Nuggets. But in 2019, I don't remember this myself, so shame on both of us, I suppose. He was actually hired as an assistant coach on Juwan Howard's staff at University of Michigan. So he's part of the Wolverines and has been now this would be his second season. But let's bring that back now to basketball, the conversation back to basketball, and as it relates specifically to the Toronto Raptors. And again, if you're just tuning in, if you're just hearing for the first time, the Toronto Raptors announced just before we came to air this afternoon that they are going to be playing temporarily in Tampa, Florida. I won't read the entire press release again, but it actually wasn't necessarily a press release, but a statement from Masai Ujiri. He said in the opening paragraph, "The Raptors worked diligently with public health officials at the local, provincial, and federal level to secure a plan that would permit us to play our 2020-2021 season on home soil and on our home court at Scotiabank Arena. These conversations were productive, and we found strong support for the protocols we put forward. Ultimately, the current public health situation facing Canadians combined with the urgent need to determine where we will play means that we will begin our 2020-2021 season in Tampa, Florida." So again, that coming from Masai Ujiri about 45 minutes ago. Jonesy.
Here's what I want to ask, and I was thinking about this during the commercial break. Has the federal government now, or the levels of government that denied this, they set the precedent with the Blue Jays. Is this going to continue to be the standard? I know cases are going the wrong way right now, but the Raptors coming back in April, baseball starting up in April. What's going to happen to the seven NHL teams? Are we bound to have, a Canadian division with no cross-border play? So, I mean, if that's the case, it's baseball, no, basketball, no. Like, with more teams, you got to figure it's going to be hockey, no, too.
Well, here's a couple of things. Hockey, now they haven't officially said this, but all the speculation and chatter out there, and from Elliot Friedman and others reporting it now too, is that there will likely be an all-Canadian division with the NHL realigning this season for we assume just this season, with I'm going to guess, based on the math of how many teams there are in the National Hockey League, there's probably going to have to be at least four divisions, if not six, but one of those divisions would be an all-Canadian division, which would then mean no travel. And then perhaps you get to the postseason and it's a bubble. I don't know what that means, Jonesy. I don't know the logistics. The NHL seems to be kind of lagging behind the NBA in terms of details as it relates to their season, their schedule, and everything else. But if that's the case, then yeah, you've got seven teams that could play in one division, and they're just going to, you know, bang against each other for 6 months and play 50, 75 games, whatever it may be, against the same six opponents. It's obviously different for the NBA. And here's what I and I want to make sure I'm clear about this, because I don't want any of the grief from people that aren't hearing me clear on social media or otherwise coming at me afterwards. Jonesy, call me out on this if I'm wrong, because we've been doing this together, not only on the air, but off the air and WhatsApp and on text messages and phone calls and everything else, and together in person doing Raptor games. We've had a ton of conversations about the pandemic, about the virus, about COVID, about pro sports in the last 4 months, let alone the last 5, 6, 8 months. So tell me if I'm wrong or if I'm not presenting this properly when I say this. My biggest beef with what's happening right now with the Raptors is that the confusion or the mixed messaging that seems to be out there from the various levels of government and the various health officials as well. And I'm also going to say, fully acknowledging that I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth here, that I also understand the confusion, because even though that you're the paid experts or you're the top of your field in this, you're the doctors, you're the advisors, you're the politicians, this is a once in a lifetime, we hope. This is something we've never encountered before. So we can't necessarily expect people to have all the answers. But what I'm trying to say to you here, Jonesy, with the confusion that I feel as a father, as a person, why is it okay to have kids in school, but we can't have more than 10 people in a restaurant? Why is it that we, like right now, they basically have told us, correct me if I'm wrong, they have told us, stay home, don't do anything with anybody outside of your own home, only leave for essential trips. But if you do happen to leave, oh yeah, by the way, everything's open. And then you're thus telling businesses, you're allowed to stay open. You can continue to run your business. But just so you know, we've told everybody to stay home and don't go out. You know, we're saying right now to a pro sports team and a pro sports league that has millions upon millions of dollars to have rapid testing, private testing, whatever else, to do things safely, as you and I have acknowledged ad nauseum a million times about the possibility of land a private charter, get onto a bus, go straight to a hotel, go straight from the hotel to the arena, arena to airport, leave again. It can be done properly. Meanwhile, my son's buddies who play hockey are going to come home from school today. They're going to drop their school bags after being in a classroom with 25 kids, and they're going to take their clothes off, and they're going to go change, and they're going to grab their hockey bag, and they're going to go to a hockey practice or a basketball practice or a baseball practice, or they're going to go outside, and they're going to go to the playground, and they're going to go scootering, and they're going to be interacting and mixing and mingling, let alone the adults that are playing in leagues and the adults that are in theater groups or whatever it may be. But yet, the Toronto Blue Jays couldn't play, the Toronto Raptors couldn't play with the money behind the Jays, the Raptors, Major League Baseball, the NBA, and whatnot. It's just the mixed messaging and the confusion that seems to be out there for all of us is what I just don't understand. And I'm not saying I'm right or I'm wrong or they're right or they're wrong. I'm just saying I think everybody is just confused by everything.
I stand with you, E. I'm confused. If we're going to put restrictions on, then let's put them on. Let's not put some of them on. Let's not, as I said earlier in the show, let's not patch the leak, but it's okay. It's the leak is patched. There's still water coming through, and it's still like wrecking the floor and the furniture. But you know what? It's not a lot of water, so it's okay. You know, the leak is patched for the most part. No, you either fix the leak or you don't. Like, and to me, I'm with you in terms of the mixed messaging with things that are still happening that compromise, you know, wellness and helping this thing move forward and stamping it out, yet at the same time other things are non-negotiable. I don't get it. And then again, the same way that in our business we're not inside a locker room, we're not inside a coach's meeting, a player's meeting, we may not have all the information and we're looking at it from where we sit, but from where I sit, And the information that I have, it looks like things can be done differently to make things better. And I just don't see that being done consistently.
Here's another part of the confusion. And I acknowledge in saying this, I acknowledge that, yes, I'm smart enough to realize there is a difference between 29 teams coming and going versus staying stationary in one place within a hotel, within a tented area, etc. But if the city of Toronto can get clearance from, or maybe not just the city of Toronto, the NHL can get clearance from the city of Toronto, the province of Ontario, and the federal government to do a bubble in Toronto, to do a bubble in Edmonton, you had half the league in two of your Canadian cities with roster sizes in the NHL that are essentially double that of basketball. Now, is the difference simply that they were tested coming in, they were daily tested when they were here, and then they were tested before they left, and thus that made it okay, and they were only allowed to go to certain places, and we're sure that no hockey player left a hotel, went to a restaurant, walked the streets, did anything like that? And if we are, if we're cool with that, then fine. But why could something like that not have been done for the Toronto Blue Jays? Why could something like that not have been done for the Toronto Raptors in terms of, hey, the Boston Celtics are coming to town. You're going from the airport to the hotel. You're stuck there. And you're being tested when you come in, and you're being tested when you leave. And if anybody's positive, they're not allowed to even come into the hotel. They're stuck on the plane. They're sent back. They're whatever it is. Or you have to be tested before you leave whatever city you're in, and tested when you land, and tested before you play the game, and tested before you go. To me, there's ways
around
this.
Yes, and you come the night before. I mean, we know how popular Toronto is. When teams have a game in New York or Boston on a Tuesday, and the next game's Friday in Toronto, hey, man, we know they're here Wednesday and Thursday. All you have to do is talk to the media relations people that are scrambling for tickets because the guys have been here for 2 days and meeting people and having a good time. So, yeah, you say you can only come the night before, and not even the night before. You can't land till 7 o'clock. And you know what, boys? It's a modified bubble quarantine. You go to the hotel, the one right beside the arena, and you can't leave. We'll bring all the meals in. We'll give you a ballroom where you will have your, where you also may choose to do your walkthrough or your video sessions the next day. And it's there. It's, sorry, you come to Toronto. It's not the other 29 cities. It's a different country. It's a modified quarantine. All that could have been accomplished. But again, you know, it's part of the messaging and where you stand with it and what, you know, restrictions are placed on people and which ones are relaxed.
All right, more on this at the top of the hour with Writer's Block. We'll come back, though, in a moment with a little bit more. Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith and Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Writer's Block coming up at the top of the hour in just a few minutes' time. So make sure you keep it tuned for more reaction, more analysis on the Toronto Raptors announcement about an hour ago that they will begin the 2020-2021 season in Tampa. And, oh, yeah, by the way, free agency now in the NBA officially opening in just over 4 hours. And this weekend, Jonesy, the Bills are on the bye. I forgot about that completely. So, of course, now I get to be an Eagles fan for one weekend so I can take a little bit more of your money.
Can we get to the point where I'm here? Can we get to the point where it becomes officially the show of the Brownies?
Well, if they get a win this weekend, it at least pulls us into an
no
even
show,
tie with the
right?
Bills, right? So it's a no show. It's nobody's show. But if they lose,
playing the long game, man. Playing the long game.
All right. Thanks to Steve Ashburner for joining us on the show today. And thanks to all of you for tuning in as well. Again, Writer's Block coming up in mere moments. It's been Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.